We're talking about connecting today, and when we talk about connecting, this is not a referendum in any way, shape, or form on social media platforms. Obviously, in social media, there is a, over the last even decade, there have been people that have really attacked social media to say, you know, that it's tearing down the fabric of our society when it comes to connecting, and we're lonelier and lonelier people as a result of social media. Now, there is certainly a role that social media plays in positive and negative ways, as that is with many different things, but social media itself is not the problem. All of our relationships, whether you have social media or not, there is this tendency that we have a wide group and we have a smaller group that we go deeper with. The thing that we're noticing in our society today is that there are less opportunities, as well as that we have less individuals or relationships that we can go deeper with. In fact, the average person in the U.S. has only one close friend. Now, this was a study that was published in the American Sociological Review. It also showed that only one in four people have someone that they can confide in. Another study stated that 75% of Americans are unsatisfied with the friendships that they do have. You see, the more connected that we claim social media makes us, or more connected we are as a result of social media, the truth is that we are lonelier people with more opportunities through social media to connect. The lonelier we become as a result, or maybe not as a result, of that social media. Now, medically, when we talk about loneliness, it actually has a pretty big impact on our lives. In fact, loneliness has been seen to impact life expectancy equal to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. The loneliness has that kind of medical impact on us. Lack of social contact has shown increased levels of Alzheimer's, heart disease, depression, and even suicide. The AARP recently put out a report that said that loneliness in seniors accounts for $6.7 billion in additional medical spending each year, credited to loneliness. Now, what is loneliness? Loneliness is not being alone, okay? Loneliness, if I was to define it, is this. It is distress caused by a lack of satisfactory relationships. Loneliness is the distress that you feel because you don't have meaningful relationships where you're connecting. You don't have those deep relationships. You don't feel like there's someone out there that knows you. There's not someone that you can confide in. And as a result of that, you can feel loneliness. Aloneness and loneliness are very different. You can be alone and not feel lonely. And at the same point, so like a hermit could not feel lonely even though they're alone. But you also hear stories of people that move from a place like Sioux Falls to New York City, and they say, never felt more lonely. But per square foot, there are more people than probably on their entire block. It doesn't matter how many people are around you, you can still feel very lonely because you don't have those meaningful relationships. There's a distress that you feel as a lack of satisfactory relationships in your life. What group in society is the loneliest group that has this dissatisfaction of satisfactory relationships? It's Generation Z. Now, you've heard of Generation X and Y and millennials and so on and so forth. Generation Z is those that are age 18 to 22 years old right now, that generation. It's the current and youngest generation that's being studied. And in a study done by Cigna, they discovered that 68% of Gen Z people feel like no one really knows them. And the scientific community agrees that this all stems from a lack of in-person interactions. Flesh and bone, face-to-face, person-to-person, not electronic or digital. Now, sure, the computer and social media and smartphones can be part of the problem, and though it is definitely the object of the blame, as we hear about it today, you can't hardly turn on the news without someone blaming social media for this lack of connection, the real problem is something different than those. You see, social media isn't the problem, but those that are lonely who are using social media, there is something above that that is driving them to using the social media that is not answering the question for them and is continuing or even increasing the loneliness that they feel. We may have things in our lives that impact us. For example, people that have certain addictions. The problem isn't the item that they use in the addiction. There's an overarching theme or an overarching issue that they're using this substance and becoming addicted to it because they're trying to numb maybe something above that. So social media isn't the problem, and loneliness in social media isn't the problem. There's something above it, and the thing above it is social isolation that people are feeling. In our culture today, in America and around the world, especially in connected cultures, social isolation is growing at a rapid rate. It's no longer just an issue or something that we can say is the advent of social media. It's true that those that engage in social media, when you look at it statistically, are lonelier people and they have more social isolation. But it seems that the increase of social media is the result of the isolation. It's not the high use of social media that increases isolation. It's those that are isolated socially find themselves tapping into or going more into social media to find this interaction. We are missing, as a people, we are missing in-person interactions. And our culture, our society that we live in, has devalued face-to-face, in-person interactions. And we've done this in lieu of various things. We've done it in lieu of busyness, going from point A to point B, or we've done this in lieu of activities. We have so many activities, there's no time to pause at one and connect with people because we're running to the next thing. Or, as a parent, if you've got two or three or four kids, my goodness, they all have to be somewhere at the same time. There is no time in our society. And because of that, our society is no longer creating spaces for these interactions. It used to be normal that when you went to a high school basketball game, that people would stick around and connect afterwards. But because that's no longer a value for us, because of the busyness of our lives or the activities that we're doing, then the next generation and the generation after that no longer has that value and the opportunities aren't there. And in our culture today, we're losing opportunities to connect with each other in that person-to-person kind of interaction. It's been devalued in our culture. I mean, gone are the days of a ice cream social. In fact, if you get invited to an ice cream social, some of you are like, what is that? Like, is that like a step into the past? Like, do I have to wear something, that's ice cream socialish? Like, what is that? When you go to that event, is it in black and white? What is an ice cream social? We don't have community days anymore. That used to be very normal. We don't have clubs that we're a part of. It used to be everybody was a part of something, some club somewhere, and it was a place where they got together and they connected with one another. Now we have forums and we have other electronic ways that we try to do this and are able to do this, but it lacks that person-to-person connection. In fact, even church attendance continues to drop, which is another place where people found a lot of connection with one another. We don't hang out with each other after our kids' sporting event, or we don't have the neighbors over anymore for game nights. And most people, when the pastor says you're dismissed, just sprint immediately out of church and don't make any connections in this space. And we think that these electronic ways are meeting the need. They're good, and they do help us connect, but they don't help us go any deeper than that. Whether it's email or text or Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat, they are doing a better job of connecting us. You cannot argue that. They do a good job of connecting us with other people. You have a list of friends. When you put something on, people will comment, right or wrong, good or bad, positive or negative. But you do have interaction with people through these social media sites. But they also are failing us when we think that that's what's going to sustain us and make us feel like we are connected and feel like we have a place, a space in this world. Because we as a people, the data suggests that we are starving for connection in a society that we try to tell ourselves we're more connected than ever. We need face-to-face interaction. We bought the lie, and now I think for many of us, we find ourselves malnourished, and we don't have the cultural infrastructure anymore for connection. So if we're going to find what we need in connection, it's going to have to be something that we seek out for ourselves, because there are not as many natural places for this. This series that I'm doing on connecting is a series which we're trying to do just this: get us to the place of understanding the need for connecting and then how we do this kind of connecting. And I believe that this series is as important as any series that I have ever taught, because the devaluing of connection has also made its way into the decrease of even church attendance, which certainly lessens the opportunity for people to hear about some kind of hope in their world that seems so hopeless. Connection is important because we're not only losing our connection with each other, but because of this, we're even losing our connection with God. So in this series, we're going to move through the value as well as the mechanical or practical aspects of connection. And I think we could all benefit from more connection or more connecting type of relationships. But before we can even connect with someone, we have to learn how to, or we have to have space or place to even meet somebody. Maybe you've heard it said before that you never will get a second chance to make a first impression. You heard that one before? But before you can even make a first impression, how do you get yourself to the place where you meet someone to make that first impression? In this series, I want to look at a couple of biblical characters, and today I want to introduce them to you. One, his name is David, and the other one is Jonathan. And in the scriptures, these two guys were the best of friends, very, very close friends. Now, David, tell you a little bit about their stories. David was a nobody. I mean, he was a shepherd, and he saw himself as a nobody for the most part. His family certainly saw him as a nobody, but of course, God saw him as a somebody. And I'd say that's the story for all of us. No matter what you think about yourself, what you've accomplished this far, God sees you as a somebody and has an amazing plan for your life, just as he did David's. Because what God wanted for David is he wanted David to become the king of Israel, which is the most absurd path for David in his life, but that's what God had in store for him. But interestingly, Israel already had a king, and his name was Saul. And Saul was the kind of person you would think should be king. He was a powerful guy, tall guy, good-looking, powerful individual, and people were fearful of Saul because he had that king kind of attitude about him. So even though God said David was going to be king, Saul wasn't ready to give up the throne. So much so that the story between David and Saul is so insane, because Saul is trying to kill David. I mean, he's trying to wipe this kid out so that he can't take the throne. And if the stories between Saul and David aren't crazy enough, it gets even crazier because Saul's son is the one who David becomes best friends with, and his name's Jonathan. Now, how absurd is that? Because eventually Saul does fall from the throne, and he ends up even being killed. He dies, and David takes the throne. But he and Jonathan are best friends. Now, why I say this is so strange is when a king dies or a king leaves that position, who then takes it? The son, right? I mean, this is Jonathan. He gets to be king. But because of his friendship with David and the love they had for one another, it's David that ends up taking the throne. And Jonathan is beyond all good with that. And that is a unique kind of friendship. So in this friendship, I mean, when you think about, you know, your own friendships or people that you know, you think through your group of friends. How did you meet your best friend? And, you know, was it like an immediate bond between the two of you, or did it grow over a period of time? I mean, I talk to some people that they say, like, their best friend, they used to be enemies, you know, and then somehow this thing happened, and then they become the best of friends. Or maybe it's, you know, your spouse or your boyfriend or your girlfriend. How did you meet? Like, how did that connection happen? You know, it's interesting that the longer people are together, especially like husbands and wives, you ever notice that they each have different stories of how they met? Like, how can that be? Well, it's true in my relationship with Jenny. Like, we have different stories of how we met. When we first met, I think we had the same story with a couple details different, but over time, it has really changed. And if you hear her tell the story versus me, they're different. Now, I tell the right version of the story. You see, I had this girl that I was dating in high school, and it was a long-term relationship. And in high school, long-term relationships are anything over 3 weeks, okay? long-term relationship. And we broke up, and I was standing between class periods with my best friend, Darren Williams, at the time, and my back was to the crowd, and I was facing a wall. Darren was standing in front of me, and he was like, dude, there's a school thing that's coming up, and we were supposed to go together, like double date, and then you broke up with this girl, and you're a loser, and you should have gone with me, and you need to get a date for this thing. I'm like, well, I don't have one, you know? And he's just putting all this pressure on me. So I said, okay, I will ask the next girl that walks by. So I spin around, and of course, right then, who walked by? Jennifer Grothy. He said to me, she'll never go out with you. But we made a deal. I asked her out, and we got married. That's how that happened. So now Jenny will tell you a whole different story, and just know, I don't know why she tells a different version. It's not the right version. That's the right version. But think of your relationships. You know, some of these relationships, you meet someone and it's like love at first sight. Other ones, they kind of grow on you. I had anticipated at this very moment this morning to be able to put on the screen a picture of someone that I would have met, that I know that the minute I meet this person, I'm going to fall deeply in love with this person. That was going to be my granddaughter. She was supposed to be here on Tuesday, but she's still hanging out inside my daughter's womb, just chilling. So I was supposed to show you a picture, and I was going to do kind of the grandpa thing. So I don't know, maybe next week or the week after, whenever she decides to have this kid, I don't know. So I thought, what do I do? So I just thought, I'm going to, with the best of my ability, I'm not like a great artist, but with the best of my ability, I'm just going to, from the heart, try to communicate the love that I have for this kid that I haven't even met yet, this beautiful girl, haven't even met yet. So even though it's not her photo, it's a heartfelt, this is her. Hi. Soon and very soon. Take a look at what happens with David and Jonathan, this first connection, interaction they have with one another. 1 Samuel chapter 18, verse 1 says, after David had finished talking with Saul, he met Jonathan, the king's son, and there was an immediate bond of love between them, and they became the best of friends. Now, we're not going to go really deep into David and Jonathan's relationship today, but I just want you to see that when they met, they connected with one another, and it was an immediate bond of love. Now, throughout the Bible, the word that we're translating love, there are three different separate words in the scriptures that we lump each one together as love in our English language because we only have one word for love. In other words, we lump together the love we have for a girlfriend or boyfriend with the love that you have for maybe a Whopper at Burger King, okay? Now, I sure hope that that's a different kind of love, all right? And some of you are like, man, but I had this Whopper one time. It was amazing. No, it's got to be really different. But we still just say love. Like, I love this, I love this, I love this. In the scriptures, there are different words for love. And here, what is trying to be communicated is that David and Jonathan had this kind of love that was sacrificial. Like, they gave of themselves for the sake of the other. They were willing to give up for the other. Sacrifice, whatever it took. And I think that's what real friends are like. You know, they're just willing to sacrifice. In fact, the Bible even says in another place that real love is being willing to lay down your life for your friend. Like, that's real love. And that's kind of love they had, which was obvious because Jonathan could have taken the throne, but he loved David so much he laid aside his right to the throne for their relationship. So they truly connected, and it was an immediate bond between them. They were connected immediately, which is really necessary. God had his hand in that because he really needed Jonathan's friendship and connection because, you know, Jonathan's dad was going to try to kill David. So he needed that connection and that friendship. The first fill-in I have for you here is that you are just one handshake away from meeting your best friend. I really believe that we have to get to a place where we are interacting with people and meeting people because you can't have met your current best friend. You can't have met your spouse. You couldn't have met your boyfriend or girlfriend. And this sounds like silly to say. You can't meet them without meeting them. Like, you couldn't have them in your life if you never met them. And I tell you, you are that one meeting away. It doesn't mean it has to be a literal handshake, but you are literally that one greeting, that one interaction, that one meeting away from your best friend or your spouse or whoever that might be that's going to be a significant relationship in your life. Because meeting and greeting people is an important part of life. And this cannot be done solely electronically. This is something that is done best in person. Even if it starts electronically, there has to at some point be this meeting together, face-to-face, in person. Throughout the Bible, there are dozens of examples of greeting one another and meeting people. And it's a value that's in the scriptures as well as it should be a value that's in our life. Look here at Romans 16:16, where it says, greet each other in Christian love. And here's this word love again, this connection, this commitment to one another. All the churches of Christ send you their greetings. Corinthians 16:20 says, all the brothers and sisters send their greetings to you. Greet each other with Christian love. 1 Thessalonians 5:26, greet all the brothers and sisters with Christian love. 2 Corinthians 13:12, greet each other with Christian love. And even Proverbs talks about the importance of face-to-face and this countenance, this look or this way that we greet one another. Proverbs 15:30, it says, a cheerful look brings joy to the heart. This idea that if we are with each other and it's that interaction face-to-face that does something within us. We need that. We yearn for that. We long for that. And in our culture today, we are starving from it. And it's not that social media is bad, but it is not replacing that. It's not scratching that itch. It's not meeting that need. We still have to have these face-to-face interactions with one another because you and I, we need people. You can't ever have too many friends. You can't ever have too much support. You can never have too many people to laugh with, and you can never have too many people to cry with. Because I think the connections you do have are worth cultivating. And the connections that you could be having are just one greeting away. And you're not going to find this on your cell phone. You're going to find this in flesh and blood, in person, face-to-face interactions. And I would argue, I know I'm a little biased in my role here, but I would argue this, your last fill in there, is that church is a great place to meet people. It's not an only place, but it is a great place. And when you think of interactions and the way that you're able to connect with people, there are very few things like church in our day-to-day lives, where we are able to connect with people. Obviously, that can happen here in a service, but not that much, because see, you're just listening to me. You're not interacting with each other. We have that initial piece where we do kind of in the nuts and bolts of building church services, we call it the meet and greet, okay? But where if they say, please stand and greet someone around you, you know, there's a lot of people that say, you should get rid of that because that's antiquated, that's old school. People are gross, I don't want to touch them. Or I'm an introvert and it makes me uncomfortable to meet someone. I get that because the more we kind of shy away from that, the more we are uncomfortable with it. But there is something about that time of greeting one another that is unique, not just to church, but is unique in the way that we can build relationships. But through church, we're able to connect in other ways too. Like we're able to connect through a Bible study that we're a part of, or we're able to connect through a small group, or you're able to connect because you sign up and you go to Canaries game, and there's other people who go to Canaries game, and you can meet each other and talk. You can connect with people at all kinds of things that happen in church. And this is unique in our society because there just aren't places like this anymore. There aren't places where you're put together and then you have this opportunity for interaction. Everything's just go, go, go. We're there for a certain purpose. We do that purpose, and then we run out the door to the next thing, not because we don't like people, but because we're busy people. But church is designed in such a way to help us connect with one another. And we have to be a people that are willing to and will strive to connect. I mean, connections can happen not just at church. I mean, they can happen at, you know, the checkout line at the grocery store. They can happen in the produce area at Walmart. They can, you know, happen at the Little League game before or after. They can happen while you're drooling over a 1958 Corvette at, you know, hot summer nights or whatever. And connections should be happening in those places. they're a little bit more difficult to happen in those spots. Church is one of those places where you can bank on opportunities each and every week. And the cool thing about church is that you already have something in common with a person that you meet for the first time, which is you go to the same church. Maybe there's aspects about that. You know, when you're connecting here on a Sunday morning and just with the shaking of hands, don't hear what I'm not saying. We're not expecting that you made some deep connection in the literal 7.5 seconds that we gave you to do that, okay? But here's what is possible, is that when you make that connection with someone in a setting like this on a church on Sunday morning, that when church is over and we say, you know, you head off, like you're dismissed, go off onto your week, if you don't run out the door, but you just quickly turn around and the person you shook hands with, strike up a quick conversation with them, I promise you that you will connect with that person in a way that's uniquely different from other connections that you'll make during your week. So much so that the next week when you come and they come, if they see you in the aisleway or they see you as you're coming in, they're going to say hello to you. When they wouldn't have said hello if you didn't turn around after the service and meet them or greet them. Because that's just this like forced interaction. But when you take the opportunity for the person that you just met and didn't know and turn around and meet them afterwards and say, hey, tell me a little bit about yourself, or hey, it's good to meet you. Where do you live? I mean, don't be creepy about it, you know? Like, you know, be smart about that. But, you know, like, do you have kids? Are they in the children's ministry? You know, tell me a little bit about yourself. And even in a quick interaction, you will have a connection with them that will be unique that you can then build on and grow with. In fact, I would even say this. When you come into church, be deliberate as to where you sit. Some of you sit in the same place every time, and that's great. So do I. I sit right here every time. You might as well carve my name in the chair because that's where I sit. And some of you, it's so funny when someone else is sitting in your spot when, like, you come to church and you're a little bit later than usual and you look and you literally stand there and you wait as if somehow they're going to like sense they're in your seat and move. But you're like lost. Like there's plenty of other open seats, but you're like, yeah, but that's my place. Like, should we just leave? Because my seat's gone. I encourage you to sit somewhere different on a Sunday and be specific. Look at someone you want to meet and go sit by that person because strategically you'll get a chance to then meet them and maybe strike up a relationship. If there's someone you don't like, well, then don't sit by that person. You know, sit by the people you like. This is really weird advice, but in measure, it makes sense. Those that you want to connect with, find them and put yourself in their presence so that you have that opportunity to connect with them and to meet them and to interact with them. Some people say here at Hillcrest, they're like, you know what, it's hard to meet people around here because I don't know them and I don't know, like, maybe they've been here for like, you know, 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, and I don't want to offend them in any way. Let me just debunk that. I've just heard that way too many times in church life. If you don't know them, they don't what? They don't know you. There's no offense to that. Like, you both could meet each other, and both of you could say, yeah, I've been here 20 years. How about you? Dang, I've been here 20 years too. Both of you should look at each other and say, we really need to do a better job of connecting because we should have met each other. That's generally not going to be the case. Yeah, you might meet someone that's only been here a few weeks. You might meet someone that's been here 10 years. Who cares? You find out about each other. Maybe you've been at different services, or maybe you're just missing each other for whatever reason. You're not connected with the same groups of people. It's okay. Just get past that and get to know who the person is. Spend some time with them. Again, sticking around after church is a great way to do that. But taking that risk of getting to know someone. In fact, you know, once you find out a little bit about them, maybe there's some other connections that will happen. Maybe there's people that you know here that they know, and another connection happens. You know, maybe you can ask them, are you going to the Canaries game? And then they say yes, and you're like, oh, yeah, we're going too. You don't have to, like, make a date, but they're going, you're going, you both know that. When you see them there, it's easy to just say, hey, how you doing? And you kind of sit near them, and you strike up a conversation. Is this a connection that's going to work? Is something developing and growing there? But you've got to take that initiative and get started with that and start doing that. You can always invite someone to a small group you have or a Bible study that you're a part of. Maybe you want to connect with others. You're not sure how, but you have, you know, I would say get involved around here. That's another great way. Maybe you want to be a part of the worship team. Maybe you want to be a part of the tech crew back here. You know, maybe you want to serve in the nursery or in the children's ministry and serve with other people, doing things that you like and you enjoy doing. You know, maybe you want to be on the facility team and help mow the lawns or repair and fix stuff around here, pass out bulletins. There's 100 different things that you could do around here to connect with others, get to know others while you're doing good and serving and helping and that kind of thing. But we need to connect with other people. It's important. We're going to dive a little bit deeper in the weeks to come here, and especially next week, about how to build a relationship and getting a little deeper into that. But I do want to give you some practical do's and don'ts to kind of finish up our time here today. The things that I would encourage you to do in the initial greeting, the initial meeting with someone, is first of all, be willing to take a social risk. It never works when people think, you know, no one comes to me. You know, no one is taking the first step with me. I think you have to say, you have to be the one to take the first step. But if everyone is saying, you be the first one to take the first step, then everyone's going to be taking steps towards each other, if you know what I mean. But some people can sit here for years and say, no one ever says hi to me. I'm going to say, well, how about you say hi to them? Why are we waiting for someone else? And do you know the body language that people put off when they are unhappy with something, right? It doesn't have this warm feeling of come meet me. It's like, I have a disease or something. Like, I am unapproachable because you won't approach me. It's backwards. Take a step. Go meet someone you want to meet. Take a risk. Take a step out there. I promise you, people are not going to reject you here. You're not going to go up to someone and say, hey, what's your name? They're going to be like, I'm not telling you. That is not going to happen here. Right? They will connect with you. They will take an interest in you. And as you're taking an interest in them, people like that. Second, do when you're meeting people is make eye contact with them. Now, this is something we have to remember because we don't have as many in-person interactions. And it's amazing when you watch people meet each other, they don't always maintain eye contact. They're looking around or looking down. And it makes you kind of feel when someone's doing that like they're not really wanting to meet you or engage you. Now, at the same point, don't be creepy about this, okay? This isn't like, you know, like don't let them look away from you, you know, and you're like big eyes, you know, because they're going to think all other kinds of things about you. But try to just be pleasant, keep that eye contact. And the third one is smile. Now, this is the one that I struggle the most with. I think when I meet people, I do a pretty good job, but my wife is always telling me, like, smile. See, you look like a sourpuss. Like, no one wants to meet you or be around you when you look like this. And I feel totally fine. I just have this look about me like I hate the world or something. I don't know. It's not how I feel. So I have to really make an effort. So when I meet people, you know, I stick out my hand. I go, no, that's stupid too. Just pleasant, okay, natural. Think of daisies. Ah, and then that would be it, you know. You just want to have a relaxed personableness about you as you're meeting other people and be aware of how you're coming across. I think most important, and I've learned this in my life, I'm more of an introvert versus an extrovert, but for all of us, introverts love this little help, I guess I'd say, is always take an interest in the other person. Because people love to talk about themselves. That is not a bad thing. We love for people to know us. So if you have a hard time with small talk and you have a hard time like with that, as you meet them, just ask them about themselves and keep those open-ended, okay? So like, what do you like about Hillcrest? You know, you're meeting someone here. Well, if you say, what do you like about Hillcrest? They won't be able to just one-word answer. I mean, the worst is when an introvert meets an introvert, you know? You're like, hi. And they're like, hi. Nice weather. Yep. Gotta go. Right? That's introverts talking to one another. And we walk away from that and go, yeah, I thought that went pretty well. But I think when you're trying to interact with them, just ask some open-ended questions about them. Like, what do you like about Hillcrest? They can't one-word answer that, okay? I mean, an introvert will always figure out a way. But for the most part, they'll tell you a little bit, you know, you got kids, how old are your kids, what school do they go to? They'll just go on and on about how awesome their family is. That's good. Okay? People like to talk, be interested in them. So that's another great thing when we're meeting another person. Also, be authentic. Be who you are. Don't be something different than you are. Don't try to come across differently. Don't try to impress. Just be who you are, because people can smell it a mile away, and they just, look, people are going to like you for who you are, not because of who you think you should be. Okay? Just be who you are. They'll do the same thing. We accept each other. I think another thing that's really important when we're meeting people is to have some empathy. Be empathetic. Care about what someone is saying. Pay attention to them. Care about it. Verbal or nonverbal cues are great as people are talking to you. And lastly, for the do's, is be curious. Want to know something about the person. I think curiosity is always great. And, you know, sometimes you can get into a little bit of trouble with this. This is the area I probably get into the most trouble with. As an introvert, I have these rare flashes of extrovert in my life. And when they come, they're ungoverned, and they come out really weird. And sometimes I think back, I go, what in the world was I doing? I have a real tendency to do this at Hy-Vee. I don't know why. There's something about standing in the line with my groceries. I can't help but look at other people's groceries. And if someone has, like, if this is guaranteed, I'm going to do this. If they have 6 or 8 items, that, like, that's it, and they put them all on the belt, right? My mind immediately says, what are they making for dinner? Right? Because if you've got, like, $200 worth of stuff, that's just all your groceries, whatever. I don't care about that. My brain can't even fathom all the stuff you got on that thing. But when you just have a couple of items, like whenever I go to Hy-Vee for a couple of items, you'll be able to tell. You're like, that's spaghetti, okay? I look at theirs, and if I can't figure it out, I ask. I go, what the heck are you making? It usually comes out like that. They're like, what? I'm like, well, it's just a crazy, and, you know, some people start hiding their stuff. Like, don't look at my stuff, you know? Well, you put it on the belt. So that probably, you know, probably none of you think that way. That's just how my brain works. But I strike up these strange conversations sometimes because I'm a little weird. But you never know how those things may go or what kind of connections you might make with someone as you just try to have a little fun in life. You know, maybe they've got an interesting tattoo or an interesting haircut or something. And not that we want to point out, like, things about people, but things that we can connect with and things that we can talk about. Be curious about people. That really helps, I think, in making those connections. But things not to do, okay? Here's some negatives. Here's some don'ts. First of all, like I said before, don't wait to be approached, okay? Take the initiative. Otherwise, you seem aloof to people. So don't wait to be approached. Also, especially here at church, when you come to church, you're going to already have friends here. That's a good thing. When you get here, circle up with your friends. Connect with them. Have fun together. Talk about your week. Things you need encouragement with. Struggles that you're having. That is all good. I would never want to say don't connect with your friends when you come to church, because that would be a really weird signal. That would be like, so you mean every time I meet someone, I can never spend time with them again? No, I want you to connect with your friends, but at some point on Sunday morning, break away from that group to meet someone new. So it's connect with them, be with them, but don't just circle up with your friends and never step outside of that. It can seem cliquey to other people. That's their own issue. It doesn't mean that you're a clique, especially if that group, even all those people in the group, break up at some point to go visit with other people, connect with other people too. So it's kind of a balance of those things. So don't just circle up with your friends, any event that you're at. If you just circle up with your friends, you'll never meet someone new because you've got this protective group that you're with. And it's hard for someone to break into that, and it's hard for us to break out of it because of the comfort of that group that we're with. Don't also have closed-off body language. You know, not folded arms or, you know, my sourpuss face or, you know, you don't want to be closed off. You want to be open to people. Also, when you go into a new environment and there's opportunities to meet people, two other things not to do. One is don't pull your phone out. Because it's so easy when we go to someplace we're uncomfortable, pull our phone out, and we have nothing to do on our phone. But the phone somehow allows us to act like we got something going on and we don't feel so awkward. But no one's going to come up to you when you're on the phone because they think you're doing something important and all you're doing is lining up pieces of candy. You know? No one will interrupt you. Same thing goes with earbuds. Okay? The younger generation especially, they have earbuds in all the time. And what it says, whether you like it or not, or whether you agree or not, it just says, don't bug me. because I'm listening to what I'm listening to, and I've tuned out the world. I have no interest in interacting. I'm in my own world doing my own thing. So earbuds out, phone put away, and you'll be able to engage people. In fact, the phone is even important when it comes to meetings that you have or like lunch, you're going to lunch with someone. So many people nowadays put the phone on the table, and it's kind of a way of saying, like, in case something important happens in my life, I'm going to have this here, which is more important than me being with you. Just turn the thing off, put it in the pocket, and you can get back to Instagram and Snapchat and everything else after lunch. When I go to lunch with people, I put the silence on, it goes in my pocket. Any of you that have gone on lunch with me, you know this is the case. I will never be interrupted by the phone when we're meeting with one another because that's rude. You are the most important thing in my life at that moment. I've made that time and it's significant. Now there's exceptions. This whole week, I have been on multiple meetings at the office as well as at lunch. And all week I've had that phone on the desk. And I've said to each person, I'm sorry I have the phone here. It's only here because my daughter may be giving birth to my granddaughter, and when that happens, that's more important than you, and I'm leaving. Because that's what I'm doing. But I don't answer other texts. I don't look at every time it would bing. In fact, it's still on silence. It's going to be a phone call. It's going to come through, and I'm out the door. But that's unique, and it's okay to say that when you have those kinds of things, but otherwise, just keep the phone away. That is the best way to go about this. And I'd say lastly for the don'ts, try really hard not to judge people that you don't know. Be willing to interact with them and to meet them, even though they look different, act different, talk different, use different language than you. It's okay. It's okay to have friends that are different than you. Believe it or not, a Democrat can marry a Republican and they can live a long, happy life together. So you're like, no, not that. Yes, for real. You can have differences and still love each other and care about each other. You don't have to think the same on everything. Otherwise, just be friends with yourself. Right? The spice of life is the differences. The things that excite us and frustrate us. That's where the excitement comes from in relationships. To be an introvert and be best friends with an extrovert, it will make you do things that you would never have thought of doing before. But that's what makes it exciting. That's why when people get married, many times they marry the opposite. They're so sick of themselves. They just love being with someone that's so different. So let those differences be there and try not to judge. And especially when you first meet them, don't critique the things that they're saying or correct all their wrong views, right? Not a good idea. So to wrap up, when it comes to meeting people, it is so important because this is the only way that you are going to meet your next best friend. So I want to challenge you this week. Now, those of you that are friend full, okay, you couldn't use one more friend. You have all the support, all the friends you possibly need. I don't think you exist, but if you exist, good for you, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart, but the rest of us could all use another friend. So if that's you today, I'm going to give you a challenge this week. I'm going to call it the six-day experiment. The six-day experiment is this. Meet one new person every day for 6 days in a row. So by the time we come back next Sunday, you will have met someone, at least one person, each day for 6 days. This is not meet six new people. It could be six new people if it's one every day. But you can't do all six today, okay? You have to at least meet at least one person every day for 6 days, even though you might meet more than one. But this is what meeting the person is. You tell them your name, and they tell you their name. Okay? So it is a little deeper. It's a little longer of a conversation. I know some of you are like, I'm freaking out. I can't do this. Then let me tell you this. I believe that if you take this challenge, the people that you will meet, the people that will be put on your heart during the week are going to be people that God ordained you, divinely ordained you to meet at the creation of the world, to meet these people. Because you just might be anywhere between 1 to 6 days away from meeting your best friend. But you are not going to meet them if you don't meet them. So, to have a little fun with this challenge, we're going to bring social media into it. So we have started, it went live this morning, a post on our church Facebook page in which you can, in the comments, let us know how it's gone for you. So you can put in an encounter that was good or bad. That's fine. In fact, if it's bad, it'll make us feel better about our encounters. If it was good, that's great. It'll encourage us to have an encounter if we haven't had one. You can wait partway through and sum up a few of them, or you can wait to the end and talk about what the experience was like for you without ever sharing what one of those encounters were. But we just encourage you to go there and to just interact with each other. Feel free to comment with one another. We're going to leave that post up so you can interact with it throughout the week and let us know how it goes on a 6-day experiment. Meet at least one new person each day for 6 days. Because you might be 1 to 6 days away from meeting your next best friend. Are you going to do it? Rather non-committal, are we? Let's pray. Father God, thanks for today, and we thank you for just this challenge here this morning of realizing the need and the value of meeting other people and not kind of falling into the wayside of like, oh, we're good, I'm fine, but deep down realizing that we do need more people that we can lean on and connect with, that we have more people that we could use in our lives, that we could find support and friendship and someone to confide in when things are going difficult or rough. And that, Lord, we have capacity in our own lives to be that for other people too. So help us to be the kind of people that care about others, that take an interest in other people, and that are willing to take a risk to meet someone new. Because just like we need someone else, all the people we interact with are also looking for someone else. But what a powerful testimony it can be that this maybe could be part of our story. This goofy or silly little 6-day experiment just might be the part of our story where we say we met that person that means so much to us in our lives. So we trust in your guidance and your divine appointments, that as you put them in front of us, that we will have the courage to step into that and to meet that person and to be genuine and as real as we possibly can. And thank you for that opportunity, and we love you. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, last thing. As you get ready to leave here today, you met some people, or at least someone, when you were asked to turn around and greet someone. That person, if you don't know them very well, is wondering right now whether you are going to, when I say you're dismissed, whether you're going to turn around and engage them or whether you're going to be rude and run away. So, if I didn't set that up any more awkwardly, thanks for coming. You're dismissed.